You'll have noticed that since my arrival in Jottenburg, I'd said very little. And, of course, the situation was really beyond comment. Events in the past 48 hours had brought me to the point where intelligent thought, let alone speech, was well-nigh impossible. The only conscious desire I felt was to get out of this nightmare as fast as possible, by any means. And yet, the hectoring way in which this cocksure young upstart shoved me into a chair and commanded me to listen stirred a resentment beneath my miserable fear. I was heartily sick of having people tell me to listen and ordering me about and manipulating me like a damn puppet. Much good it had done me to take it all meekly, it had been one horror after another, and only by the luck of the devil was I still in one piece. And here, unless I mistook the look in Starnberg's eye, was going to be another brilliant proposal to put me through the mill. Open defiance wasn't to be thought of, naturally, but in that moment I felt that if I did manage to muster my craven spirits to do something on my own behalf, it probably couldn't be any worse than whatever he had in mind for me. "Look here," says he, "how many of these damned Danes know that you are really an impostor?" I could think of Grundvig and Sapton, for certain. Their peasant followers I wasn't sure of. But Rudy brushed them aside as unimportant. "To whom matter," says he, "and on my side, Bismarck, Bersonin, and Kraftstein? We can't forget Descartes and that squirt of a doctor. Now, suppose our captive prince goes down that excellent pipe tonight, and we let down the bridge to encourage your friends to attack. It would be possible to arrange a warm reception for them, warm enough to ensure that Grundvig and Sapten never got off that causeway alive, anyhow. Kraftstein could easily meet with a fatal accident during the fight. Somehow I'm sure he would. And by the time the sons of the Volsungs had fought their way in and cut up the survivors, you and I could be on our way to the shore by boat. Then back to Strachan's and the acclaim of everyone who's been wondering where their beloved prince has been. Oh, we could invent some tale, and who would there be to give you away? Descartes and the doctor Dand. Your Danish friends couldn't, being dead. And by this time Bismarck and Bersonin are far too busy, I'll be bound, to worry about Strachan's." Seeing my bewildered look, he explained. You haven't heard the news, of course. Berlin is alive with alarms, it seems. The revolution's coming, my boy. The student rebel and the rest will have the King of Prussia off his throne in a week or two. So dear Otto has other fish to fry for the moment. Oh, it's not only in Germany, either. I hear that France is up in arms, and Louis Philippe's deposed, they say. It's spreading like wildfire. He laughed joyously. "Don't you see, man? It's a heaven-sent chance. We could count on weeks, nay, months, before anyone gave a thought to this cozy little duchy, or to the identity of the Duchess's consort. And what use would that be to us? God, you're brainless. To hold the reins of power, real power, in a European state, even a little one like Strachan's. If we couldn't squeeze some profit out of that, enough to set us up for life before we took leave of them, then we aren't the men I think we are. Do you know what the revenues of a duchy amount to?" "You're mad," I said, "raving mad. Do you think I'd put my neck into that again?" "Why not? Who's to stop you? We wouldn't last a week. Why, half the bloody peasants in Strachan's probably know that there are two Carl Gustavs loose about the place. They'll talk, won't they? Bah! Where's your spirit play, actor?" he jeered. "Who would listen to them? And it's only for a few weeks. You've done it once already, man, and think of the fun it would be..."